right, guys, we're back. Another episode of Smart Brand Marketing. Today with me, I have someone very special, and I'll tell you why.
That's very kind of you.
We're in the same room, so he's laughing. But this guest here, he was actually the first podcast I ever listened to.
Oh, yeah?
He was the one that got me.
Dude, you got your one monitor off just like a rapper. That's exactly what a rapper would do. Hip-hop producer, Tom, everybody. You should talk more about your artist background, you know?
I should, yeah, maybe.
You're a movie maker.
That's true.
Record maker.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. But anyways, we're going to talk about you a little bit now.
All right.
So you got me to the first conference in Asia, to the first conference in Berlin. You told me to start the podcast, and I sat there with you, and I said, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard, and started one the next day. And now we're on the show.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So this is Dan Andrews, the host of Tropical MBA, and author now.
And author, yeah.
And author. You got a membership community.
Professional blowhard.
Yeah. Professional blowhard. And you've sold a business.
Yep.
Not too long ago, right?
2015.
So we spoke about this topic a little bit before we came on.
Can I just pitch my shit right after the beginning and get that out of the
way? You got something to pitch?
Yeah, I do.
You just told me you got nothing to pitch.
I got something to pitch.
Okay, pitch.
All right. If you want to hire remote employers, if you want to work and live anywhere in the world, go to dynamitejobs.co. We help people live and work anywhere. That's my pitch. That's what I do for a living right now.
I love that. So
aside from the TMBA podcast, which you should listen to.
Yeah, so this is how you should all pitch people at the podcast. You tell them I have nothing to pitch today.
And then you just
and then as soon as you get introduced, sell. Like, can I sell my shit?
I just want to get it out of the way. You can cut it out if you don't like it.
Nah, it's staying in.
But what are we gonna do today?
But yeah, so we talked about this a little bit and it was bothering me, you know, like figuring out like whether the place I'm living at has a big effect on my business. And in some ways, yes, but in some ways I feel like maybe it doesn't, you know, and you just said that, you know, being in a place is the most important thing, like in a place that works for you, you know, it's the most important place. And I'm not so sure, you know, and I'll give you an example. And I mentioned this before the show, like when I'm in the US, I have a real problem with my Filipino employees. And maybe that's a problem with my business, but I just have a problem like that. And they don't work as well as if I'm in Asia. You know, they'll ask me questions, you know, in the middle of the night and just wait until the whole morning, right? But when I'm here, my calls, my sales calls and interviews on the podcast get messed up. Like it's all mornings and nights.
And your audience knows where you are. Where are you?
I don't know where I am. I'm in Chiang Mai, but...
You're in Chiang Mai in North
Thailand.
Well, how has being in Chiang Mai affected your business positively or negatively?
That's a good question.
So let's dig into it.
Yeah, so...
You should be able to figure it out, right? Yeah. We should be able to map certain problems and opportunities directly to the place you live in, as I think a lot of people can.
So the big opportunities come in this time of the year, and I do mention that on the podcast sometimes. Like, you know, between September and January... We have this influx of people. We have all these conferences going on. We have so much stuff. It's like networking 101. You just can't get any better than this. You know, it's hyper networking in a way. Like we could go out every single night and be with a group of, you know, lifestyle business people or just people with online businesses.
Yeah.
And it's super difficult in the States.
Incredibly. It's impossible. I can't imagine anything quite like it. I mean, maybe kind of San Francisco and Austin and New York, if you're willing to sit on the train for an hour and a half every day, but I mean, it's pretty unique.
Yeah.
We're talking like you're 10 or 15 minutes away from sitting around a table with serious business people every single night.
Yeah. But that's only maybe the 4 months of the year, 4 or 5 months. Right. And that's the one thing which I've been thinking, you know, like doesn't make sense. Because I've lived here 3 years on and off. Like I leave for a few months, come back, you know, like, but I've been thinking, does it make sense to settle into a place that you pretty much have to leave 4 to 5 months out of a year? You know, in the smoky season, which I do mention on the podcast sometimes, like that's the one thing which makes things difficult, you know, because you do have to leave. Like no one sane will stay here. But that means you got to find a new place, new location, you know, get a new apartment, either start things over again or try to go back and pick up from your previous trip, you know, which I've done too, like in the US or in.
Sure. Like we call that, like, I call that kind of like being a honeybee. Like you go around and you kind of, you pollinate like different towns or, you know, you sort of revisit places for different seasons. Right. I mean, this is not something new. This is like what snowbirds do, for example. You know, you say like, hey, nobody sane would stay in Montreal over the winter. So you go to Florida. Right. And this is not a new concept. You know, it's pretty typical.
It's kind of new to me, I think, you know, because my family, they've stayed in the same spot usually for a long time.
Sure. Mine too. You know?
Yeah. So it is a new concept.
It's something that wealthy people have done for a long time.
Yeah. That's something wealthy. So when I came to New York and I seen some of my friends that lived in the Hamptons, right, they would pick up their shit, get it shipped. I'm saying like the whole house would get shipped over to Florida with cars. Or they'll have double of everything and something's in a storage room.
Yeah.
And then they ship everything down. I was like, that's not, you know. I mean, it's great, but I've never been able to do that, you know, before.
Sure. And it's essentially what a lot of, you know, location independent entrepreneurs now do. They have a winter location and a summer location, or they have a home base. And then, you know, we often call it the 9-3 lifestyle. So it's like and I feel like that works very well with Chiang Mai. It's like, so you say, you know, that 3 months is when you leave, the 9 is your home base. And it's sort of like a sensible balance between maintaining long-term friendships and like ties to your community and everything, but you still got that 3 months to, you know, first off, avoid the worst weather of wherever your home location is. Second off, to engage in your business in a new way, to engage with fresh ideas and new people. So it's like, I think that's an interesting approach because, you know, there's so much advantage to both having a home, you know, living a lifestyle where you have no home. There's like an enormous downside to that, you know, and living a lifestyle where you're in the same place all year long. I think there's an enormous downside to that too. So having this 9-3 approach, those three, you say, okay, well, I'm making some sacrifices for my business by being here, but in those 3 months, I'm going to crush it. I'm going to focus on taking meetings. I'm going to focus on meeting my clients in person. I'm going to focus on going to conferences and generating new ideas or whatever. And then those 9 months, I'm going to enjoy the benefits that come from having a home base and having friends there and everything. So that's one approach.
That is one approach. And I'll tell you what my problem with that was, because that's pretty much what I've done the last 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. But last year we went to Krabi, right? And then we went to Phuket. And I had a house I was paying for.
So let's not assume that your listeners know these places.
These are three
I'm
different
cities.
I'm like
an old school podcaster. You have to describe these places.
So these are three different cities in Thailand, okay. Right? So Chiang Mai is in the north. This is where we live. There's mountains around. Krabi is down south. It's a really chill place by the beach. And Phuket is a city similar to Chiang Mai, also by the beach.
It's like an island city.
It's an island city, yeah, with a huge mountain in the middle, so you have to drive over the mountain to anywhere. So any place takes about 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we went to Krabi for the smoky season, and then we decided to check out Phuket. And sitting in this very nice apartment overlooking Phuket, I just realized I'm paying for three apartments at the same time. And maybe it's just because of my background, but I was like, what the hell are you doing, Tom? You are paying for three apartments.
Where's the third one? So you got Krabi.
So I had the 1 year lease in Chiang Mai. So I was paying for that. I had a 3 month lease in Krabi.
Okay.
So I was paying for that, and then I rented the apartment in Phuket for like 2 weeks to check that out.
Okay.
Which, you know, which was fine, but just that mental thing. I was like, how much money am I wasting? I'm not even at those other two locations.
But that's just because you didn't have a plan, right? I mean, it would be easy to mitigate that concern. If you, for example, you know, if you say like, I'm going to go do business in the States for those 3 months, it's pretty easy to rent out your apartment for that time. Or even if that's not the case, like you could say like, here's how I'm going to justify those living expenses. Like I'm going to make that money back. It's an investment.
That's true. Yeah, I think this was just more of a vacation trip.
Yeah, you were just balling out.
I was just balling out.
You're like, what am I doing down here? Like, you know, Krabi isn't that far from your home. It's not all that much different. Of course, there's a beach there. But from a business perspective, I can imagine how that would frustrate you. Yeah, you're just spending money. You could have just easily tolerated some smoke and sat in your home apartment.
Yeah, I don't know about that smoke tolerating thing. But you know what I mean, though, right? Like, it was this moment of, like, my history and my moment of bowling out, they met. And they were confused, right? Like, who are these two people? Like, the two sides of their brain kind of met up. And yeah. Like, dude, like, what are you doing? One part's like, I can afford it. The other one was like, you know, you're the dumbest person right now.
Yeah, I can understand that totally.
Yeah, so that was frustrating me a little bit. Plus, you know, the thing with visiting new spots, like, you never know how the internet's going to be. Like, you never know just how comfortable and easy it will be to work, or difficult.
Yeah,
you know?
It takes time to develop those that kind of understanding.
And in Krabi, this was very difficult because their internet is spotty at best, and you have to go to Starbucks, which is like the only location with awesome internet.
Yeah.
So you got to drive to Starbucks. They also have it at the AIS, which is a phone store, but they have no places to sit and no coffee shop nearby.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the thing. Like, here's what I said at the top of the show, or is location independent is not location arbitrary.
Yeah.
To me, this is a important point in our community because everybody just thinks it's like, so long as I have an internet connection, I can just bust around and do anything. It's like, well, no. Like, if your business has a high level, needs a lot from you, if it needs a lot of energy from you, then where you're at and like how it sets you up to provide that energy to your business, it matters a lot. And for a lot of people, it doesn't matter. Like, they have an affiliate site and it pays them $5,000 a month and they're just as happy to sit in Krabi and have a shitty internet connection and go climbing every day or go down to the beach. But for people who are hustling, it'd be nice to have a good office with a big monitor with fucking awesome internet and a bunch of quality people around you that are doing the same thing. So to me, it's all about, that's the beauty of growing a business in 2018. Is that you have a great deal of flexibility in terms of like where the workers are, where you are, where the time, what the strategic time zones are, and how that plays a role in your business. So here's an interesting thing. You know, between your Krabi apartment, your Phuket apartment, and your Chiang Mai apartment, I bet if we added that all up, it's less than staying in New York City for, renting a place in New York City. And so
true.
So then we can take a look at your personal bottom line and suggest like, how strategic is it? You know, does it make sense? Is New York City rent an investment in your business? Is it a liability? And you know, by paying 20% of that cost to live in Chiang Mai, is that and plus you get these added benefits, is that a sensible investment? You know, those are all calculations we all get to run, and that's like a ton of fun. You know, we don't just have to rock up to whatever office, whatever city we were started in, and just have to make it work, you know? Have to make it work with the people that are in that city, have to make it work with the costs of that city, have to make it work with the commutes in that city. Now it's all wiped clean, and we get to start with, where should we be strategically located? Myself and my staff and my clients and everything, we get to choose, we get to model and design these things. And so, yeah, all of a sudden we're considering a lot of new things that weren't considerations for us probably when we got started as entrepreneurs. And for me, that's freaking rad. And that's why I'm freaking obsessed with this idea. Here's the idea, Tom. Here's my obsession and the reason I've been able to have a podcast for 10 years doing this, talking about the same crap. It's this nugget. And it's not like Tim Ferriss's message that we talk about the 4-hour work week quite a bit, but it's similar. I forget where I got the idea. It sort of crystallized, It like triangulated in my mind, but it was this. It was that you can build a great deal of wealth living location independently. That was the idea that still to this day, like you can have a great deal of time and freedom, flexibility, and still grow wealth. Now, if you take advantage of those things a lot, you might build wealth slower, right? But you still get to build the wealth. That to me changed my entire life. And I'm still just as interested in it, you know, 10 years later. Because if you would have told me that when I was like 21, like I would have just passed out. I mean, I almost did pass out. I mean, you know what I mean? Just that idea just felt so impossible. And it's sort of really what I wanted. It was what I would have wished for, you know, as a young career person. And then when it sort of waltzed along and occurred to me in 2006-07 that, oh my gosh, like the world is, technology is conspiring to allow this. And when I started hiring people overseas and like we went from like the fax machine to like PDFs via email and it all of a sudden like things sped up a little bit and I was like, oh my gosh, like this might be possible. And so,
right.
So yeah, anyway, that's all to say, I understand like why all these things are important. It's not arbitrary where you choose to base yourself and your business.
Yeah, I think it's a little more difficult now than it was in 2010 or 9 in some ways. Like it's easier to actually move, but that's what makes it more difficult.
Why
is
that?
You have too many choices now.
Okay.
Like before, you know, you were one of the only podcasts, a lifestyle podcast that actually made sense. Like now, without bullshit, like without, you know, like being scammy. So people listen, they came to those 2-3 locations, which you mentioned. Since then, so many things are happening now, right? There's so many different cities, so many of these summits, conferences, podcasts, there's like hundreds of them. And it's sort of hard to choose. And the having so many choices.
Well, let me just say, there's a difference between the legible community and the actual community. So the community that you see and the community that is in its real self. So it's easy to come to a conference in Chiang Mai and assume that, oh, that's the place, everybody's there, like these are the people that showed up. That's not the actual community. The most popular place that people went was not in their fucking office. Can I swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
The most popular place was their home. The number one of our audience, people want the location freedom to work from home. They want the location freedom to work around their family. And the number one desire in terms of location flexibility that people desire is to be around their family. So this is particularly true of new parents. They want to go to where the grandparents are. So forget these exotic freaking locations. Forget like your villa in Phuket. That is the majority of the audience, Tom. I'm not kidding you. It is a minority of the people that are single, that don't have responsibilities or have less responsibility. And look, a lot of family people do this too. I mean, just hanging out with a family entrepreneur the other day here. So all that said, it typically skews, I think it's a trend that's changing, but it typically skews younger, flexible, freedom, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out that for a lot of people, the choice is clear. This isn't a hard decision. The choice is, I got a family to raise. Like, I don't want to freaking sit on the highway 3 hours a day. And I don't want to have my staff do it either. So, and I don't want to pay for the office, but I don't want to move out of San Diego. I just don't want to pay San Diego commercial rent. And so what I'm going to do is like, listen to these podcasts and I'm going to start hiring people in affordable cities. Okay. And I'm going to say, you know what? Someone from Tulsa, Oklahoma, how about you work from home and work for me instead of someone that lives in California and I have to pay, you know, or I'm going to hire expats that live abroad so I don't have to pay payroll taxes or whatever. Now, all of a sudden, you can get strategic about it instead of saying the default option is to sit on the highway, go to a dumb office that's expensive, and enforce that everybody else do it as well.
You know, you just mentioned something that brought back a memory that's been bugging me for so long. When I worked in, I think this was Hilti. It's a tool company from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in New York, in Queens. I was a sales guy.
Yep.
And we went to a teaching thing, like in the beginning, like three-week training, you know, in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
What's it like?
Well, Tulsa is a place where the only food you'll find is fast food.
Can I say something mean?
Yeah, go ahead.
About Tulsa, Oklahoma, having never been there?
Yeah, go ahead.
They launched this digital nomad, like come work remote from Tulsa.
From Tulsa?
Yeah. And what they're offering is, of course, they have all this list of great things about Tulsa. Come have craft beer or whatever. And at the end, it's like, we'll pay you $10,000. And I thought, you know what, Tulsa? Not enough.
No, not enough. Well, so this is...
That's just me being mean.
But something else...
Start my stand-up comedy career.
Something else just bothered me. When I found out there were three people from Tulsa in the classroom, everyone else was from different cities in the whole country, that they were getting paid the exact same amount as we were getting paid in Queens, where their little apartments were like $500 for like a 2-bedroom. And in New York, I was paying like $1,600. Like $500, that was my garage.
Mm-hmm.
But we were getting paid the same. Like that's something that just bothered me for so long. Just like working for a life insurance company, when I realized every time I'm making a sale, they're getting residuals for the next 20, 30 years. And I was like, if I can make the same income as I can in New York and live anywhere in the world, if I can get a business that does residual, so I mean, it means every sale I make, money comes in every month, I'm set.
You know what? and this is maybe I encountered the same kind of frustrations, but on the other side of the token. So forget about building wealth from anywhere on the planet. There's this idea that a dollar isn't a dollar, Tom. Like, for not all dollars are created equal. Like, I remember, you know, would you rather make six figures at a job that you have to like work 40, 50 hours a week at, sit in commute, like wear khakis and a button up, or would you rather make 50 grand a year being allowed to like live and work anywhere you please? Yeah, for me, time and location flexibility is easily worth 50 cents, you know, is easily worth that premium, or is easily worth taking a discount, in other words, on the salary. I know people who don't think that's true. You know, everybody gets to make their own decisions about that. I have this friend who is a software developer in New York City, and he makes really good money. You can imagine the kind of money that a software developer in New York City might make.
Yeah.
And I just think, man, you could like bust off anywhere and like make a third to a quarter of what you make by like, it would be so easy. And for me, that's a no-brainer, but for a lot of people, it's not. You know, this just suggests that for me, I really value those things. So I don't know where I'm going with this. The other side of that token, it's like, the frustration with those jobs. I remember hiring a software developer when I used to work in the office, and when the traffic was bad, he'd call me up and be like, hey man, I'm just going to do it from home if that's no big deal to you. And it sort of dawned on me that this employee was smarter than I was, you know, that I didn't have to be this martyr to the office anymore, or martyr to my own business or whatever, that I could be smarter about it so long as I had a plan.
So I've had some of the audience members reach out to me, you know, when I mentioned the Chiang Mai, which I don't often, but I mentioned it a couple times. They're like, Tom, how do I make this happen?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've just realized my audience also, when they hear of like, oh, traveling to these locations, they're having freedom. It's like, yeah, they want it, you know? And that made me think too, like, is that really necessary? I mean, it's good to travel, but it's hard for me to say, because I'm in this bubble and I'm doing it. And then there's, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. Like, what if I was in this place now? Like, I loved Warsaw when I was there for like a month and a half. And I was like, oh, what if I was there? Like, I loved it. But would I like it if I was there for a year? Mm-hmm. You know, with Chiang Mai, I feel the same way with the States. I went to San Diego to the traffic and conversions. I'm like, man, this is baller. I'm loving it.
It's a cool spot.
Cool spot. Will I like it the whole year? Not sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this choice thing, right? Like, because we can be anywhere.
The paradox of choice.
It's the paradox of choice, right? And this is something I always tell my clients, too, on their websites. Like, I had this lady recently, gets 3 million people to her website. Above the fold, that's the upper part of the screen when you log in, 26 choices, 26 different places for people to click.
Yeah.
So she's getting no conversions. Why? Paradox of choice, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with our lives, right? When I think of locations, like, oh, Tom, where would you really want to live? And I'm thinking of like 10 at the same time.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So what does that mean then? I think it means that you ought to consider what like a stronger sense of leadership and vision in your own approach to your business might look like. Because the thing about like setting up an office on Main Street and waiting to see who walks by and like being on the phone and the BlackBerry 24/7 or whatever is that you can just be reactive and get the money to come in. But if now all of a sudden you've got the 26 choices, and this is this idea that I love about running internet businesses, is that like it's like this alternate universe theory or whatever. There's like thousands of ways your business could be, and there's thousands of different versions of looks that your business could ultimately look like. It's up to you to like choose, you know, the ways in which you are going to do it. And yeah, if it's tough to do, then it is tough. That's the hard thing about hard things.
Business is tough in the first place, right? So, you know, you can't expect a good business to be easy. Like it's easy and it's boring when it works, but it's difficult at the same time. You know, there's like, there's different paths of a business, different moments in a business. Like when you get the system in place, yeah, it's easy. And we kind of mentioned that before the podcast too, a little bit when we talked, like these different stages. In the beginning, it's the hustle. And you just feel like, man, like the only thing that's stopping this from growing is me. When you get the system, at least with me, then it's like, do I rebuild the system so it works even better? Or do I just coast? Because it's easy. It's working. Everything's great. We do the same thing over and over and over again. and then leaning into the things that are uncomfortable too. That's how you grow. Like you gave the Helsinki bus theory. Maybe you can give that on the podcast.
Sure. It's this idea. So it's a theory to make you think about what you ought to do when things get challenging. So, and I don't know who to credit it to, but it started as a way for artists to think about their career. So you're in the downtown Helsinki and basically you need to jump on a bus and you choose, there's a bunch of different routes you could choose. And you could imagine like each bus stop is sort of like a year in your career. And at the first few bus stops all sort of like look the same. They're the same way out of the city. And it's like for entrepreneurs, it'd be like, you know, come up with your idea and like get your first few customers and put up your website and all this kind of stuff. And as you get further and further out of town, you get in a little bit more rarefied air. But the problems become, you know, you show up at the fourth bus station and you're like, man, everybody's already been at this bus station. And they've sort of like done it better than me. They're like at a better cost. They seem to be outbidding me or whatever it is, problem is in your niche. And you keep going and going and going. And then you're like, you know what? I'm sick of being like the worst one in the room here. I'm sick of being the shittiest FBA seller. I'm sick of being having the worst online course or the online course that's not making me enough money. And so what I'm going to do jump off of this bus, get in a cab and go back to the center of town and choose another route. And so whether that's, you know, I'm going to change my business model, I'm going to change my niche, I'm going to change my industry, I'm going to change my approach, whatever. But the punchline is stay on the effing bus. And it's to continue to build out your skill set, your knowledge, your wisdom, your understanding. And eventually you get to, ideally, something that works. You'll notice this in the creative crafts. It's that, so here's a concept for you. One, money lags behind value. And as entrepreneurs, your job isn't necessarily money, it's to understand value. The same thing could be said for your taste. Your ability to create art lags behind your taste in art. So this is a very frustrating concept. So like you could, for example, used to rap, right?
Yeah.
So you could listen to a great rapper, even like a Tupac, and certain tracks you could
Biggie.
Sorry, yeah, right. East Coast dude. There's certain tracks of Biggie's that aren't great. Certain stuff, it like he phoned it in. It wasn't his best work.
Yeah, that's true.
And you knew. You knew. But I bet if I then said to you, okay, so you know what's good and what's bad, right? So how about you go write something that's better than that bad thing that Biggie did? You would find that enormously challenging.
Yeah.
And it's this idea that's like the fifth or sixth stop on that bus, right? It's like, you know, and so what are you going to do? You're going to go back and become a folk singer? You're going to go back and you're going to, you know what I mean?
Not
it's this
happen.
Idea of like, you got to stay on the bus.
You got to stay on the bus.
So that's the idea. And the value in money thing is important too, because this is what it's about being deliberate about the business that you're choosing. You have to believe in the value you're creating. Why? Because you have to define it time and time again. You have to build it year after year after year. And eventually, if enough people agree on that value, they're going to be able to exchange it with each other through the conduit of money. But there are things that are valuable in this world that people don't agree on because it doesn't exist yet, say. It only exists in your mind.
Right.
And so because people don't value it collectively, you can't make money from it. And that's what the first few years of being an entrepreneur is all about. That's why when you start a new business, no one wants to buy your shit. And that's why you can only say, oh, well, I'm going to get on the phone with somebody and I'm going to convince them. Because between me and you, I can communicate value such that you agree and then give me money for it. The hard part is getting that to happen at mass. And that can take years and years and years. And that's why you should stay on the effing bus.
So the question is, should you stay in the effing city too?
Well, I don't know.
Right. That's the question too. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, for me, There's so many different ways you can approach that. Like a lot of people approach it from a lifestyle perspective. But if what you want to say is I want to live in the best city for my business, I think you can start to become pretty scientific about where that place might be. So there's this great Paul Graham article called What Does Your City Whisper?
Didn't you write that?
No.
Because I heard that from you.
So what I did was just I wrote about the concept that you brought up.
Okay.
So at tropicalmba.com, everybody, I wrote about this. So the idea is that, you know, like every city and book has this like explicit message. They want you to do something. Right. Even like this podcast, this conversation, we're trying to like say things, but then there's like an implicit message that's not maybe direct, but that it's like you can feel it or sense it about, you know, an example is in the 4-Hour Work Week, that book, Tim Ferriss never says, quit your job and travel the world. But that's what that book whispers. Like everybody reads that book and comes away with this sense that the book is trying to, man, I should quit my job and travel the world. That's exactly what everybody thinks when they read that book. And that's powerful. It's interesting, right? That he never says it. And New York City, for example, it says, go make more money. That's what that city says. In LA, it says like, be more famous or be
something. Right.
And so anyway, like, what's the point? The point is that they're like, the scene matters. The scene rubs off on you. Your environment rubs off on you. So you might ask, you know, where's the scene for, you know, what's my Paris in the 20s?
Right.
What's my Silicon Valley in, you know, the 80s? And the hard part is that it's not going to be written about like in Inc. magazine. You have to kind of put your tuning fork to the ground, because normally scenes don't become legible until, like, to the media, for example,
until it's done. Yeah,
exactly. So, and the other thing, it's even hard. Like, you can have a crisis of consciousness about it. So for example, people deride my decision to spend time in Chiang Mai, and they think that it's because a bunch of jokers live here, right? Like unserious entrepreneurs. If you were a serious entrepreneur, you would be in New York or LA or San Francisco. The problem with that is that thinking is, at least at this moment, like a bit old if what you're trying to do is bootstrap a business. In fact, like the people that are making millions of dollars bootstrapping, they're in places like Austin, Chiang Mai. And yeah, like the previous decade, that might not have been the case. So if you would have gone to Austin 15 years ago, it's like a better place to busk on a corner than it is to start a business, whatever. And the same thing is true of Chiang Mai. I was out, you know, for dinner the other night, sitting around the table, you know, multiple people there had like bootstrapped themselves into serious wealth.
Yeah.
And if you were to sit around that same table in New York, you might be able to do that, but it's like, well, how did you get wealth? Oh, well, like 10 years ago, we raised like a VC round and like I did this. Or somebody might say, well, my family did this and then I took, or like, those are the stories. But at the table at Chiang Mai, you know what the stories were? It was like, oh, well, we were an FBA seller 2 years ago and we did this. Or, you know, you get the point, is that like the narratives are very different and the ways in people are getting there are very different depending on the scene.
Yeah, so back in New York, like I loved the scene in New York in the late 90s and the early 2000s, right? Before like the gentrification, all this stuff happened. Like now I'll go back to my neighborhood where you couldn't walk safely, and I loved it that way. Where now there's some guy on a bike with a mocha or something and a beard, you know, just riding through. I'm like, how is this even possible? You know, so it changed. The thing that I really like about places like Chiang Mai, for example, and yeah, maybe before it was like people are broke making their first thousand, there's still a few of them. This is where a lot of self-made people are,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is not the case in New York, just like you said, for the most part. And I've always had a lot of, I guess I looked up to people who are self-made more than anything. Like when someone tells me, oh, I heard Gary Vee say something, I'm like, a dude that got a $1.5 million wine business given to him by his parents? Yeah, I don't give a shit. Which, nothing against Gary Vee, but it's just, you know, I'm just like, this is not my audience. Or this is not someone I will look up to, you know, just, I don't give a shit. But if someone says, this guy came out of nothing, now he's got like a $10 million business because he made it in 2 years and sold it, I'm like, yeah.
Well, and I think thinking about scene is interesting because, you know, not only does it matter like what's happening in that scene, but it matters like what your role can be in it. So what's your foothold in that scene? And people talk about this like very commonly in terms of real estate markets. It's like, you can say like, oh, the Washington DC housing market is taking off great or whatever. But if you don't have like $1 million to get into that market, then you can't have a foothold, then maybe that's not the right scene for you. Same thing, you know, so you can think about it the same way with entrepreneurial scenes, you know, like, yeah, maybe New York is the place for the most ambitious entrepreneurs or whatever, but if you can't get a foothold,
right.
And all the conversations that are happening are sort of 10 years past you or whatever. So I don't know the answer to this question. There is no answer. That's the fun part about it. But I love this idea of sniffing out scenes, and it's been enormously important for me and just interesting.
Yeah. I've been doing that too. So yeah.
And the foothold thing. I mean, so yeah, we talked about, you know, the location independent Kool-Aid or whatever. And one of the ways to get a foothold, if you're becoming self-made, is to say, look, if you can save up $10,000, that means that you can be an entrepreneur for a year in Chiang Mai. And you can't say that about many American cities, and not many American cities that you'd want to be in, and there wouldn't be the scene there. So you can come out to Saigon, you can come out to Chiang Mai, and you can be around hundreds of other people, of which, yeah, a lot are going to be jokers, a lot are going to be posers, a lot are not going to be serious, but there's going to be a few that are going to be at the top of the class. They're going to be the high flyers, and if you can find them, you can befriend them, you can figure out what they're doing, you can have dinner with them, you can hang out with them, and all of a sudden, 5 years from now, you're going to be sitting around a table like this, Tom. You're going to be joking about, remember when we were all broke? Remember when we were all first got here? Remember this, remember that? And yeah, we've been a part of stuff like that over the past decade, and that's been really fun.
It's true, and I would never change it for anything else. It's just, you know, just some thoughts I've been having lately, you know, about the different places. Should I sniff out more? Should I stay here? Should I go there? And we usually end up at pretty good tables, you know, so I definitely feel like that's a good part. With the jokers, I don't know, as long as you just keep away from any coaches, you'll be fine.
It's always tempting, though. I mean, there's this, when you're part of a scene that is nascent, you know, and you don't know where it's going to go, there's always this like grow up button, you know,
right.
And it's like in our community, it might be like, well, if you're going to be serious, like you should get an office and you should be, you know, have a headquarters in the United States. That would be like a typical kind of grow up option. And like another one might be like, you get a certain level, you bring in a real CEO into your business or whatever. And I don't know, like for a lot of businesses that might make sense, but we both know people that have, you know, multi-million dollar businesses with tons of employees that decided, you know what, I'm not going to hit the grow up button. In fact, we're part of this scene that believes that this is what the future of businesses look like. The, you know, once you get to your 50th employee, you don't say, okay, let's get an office in Portland or in New York. You continue to grow it remote. And those are the stories, frankly, that I'm most interested in highlighting, because I think they point towards something interesting about the future of business.
That's actually a conversation I had with James Framko a couple years ago. And he said if he wants to grow his business past 100 employees, because he was doing a lot of fulfillment, like the SEO business and things like that. He's like, I'm going to have to redo the whole business, bring in a CEO, all the stuff. I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I don't know, magically figured out how to kill all the fulfillment, have only 5 employees now, and still make around $1 million in revenue per year, which, you know.
Become a coach.
That new book is amazing, by the way. The one, you know, that he just put out. Mm-hmm. It's so small, but it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that, it just completely blew my mind. I was like, you can make $1 million in revenue and have no fulfillment. Because look, my businesses make money, but I always
have that fulfillment thing.
Well, so he's got the membership community, mm-hmm. you know, which is full of his courses. And you know,
what percentage of the $1 million is that?
I think from what he said, about 600,000-700,000. You know, and then the other 300 comes from his upper silver circle, I think it's called. And he has a coaching group, which he coaches once a week, $10,000 per person per month, you know.
That's not quite right.
Something like that. He just, you know, whatever I read, like, I got to go through the book again. But it was just something like that. Maybe it's the opposite. But it's basically he spends one day. That's what I got out of it. He spends one day of the week on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the week, he'll come in, maybe the community, just answer a couple of questions, and then he's surfing and just hanging out, creating some content. But overall, it's a, you know, it's a no fulfillment business, pretty much. That's the main thing that's always kind of dragging my businesses down. Like I'll sell a whole bunch of things and then the fulfillment's like, you know, a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But just the idea, you know, that you can build a pretty big business like that with 5 employees and no fulfillment. Like I didn't even think that was possible.
Fair. And I think, you know, I think it'd be, have you had James on the show yet?
Have not.
It'd be worth to dig into it.
And I'm definitely going to bring him on soon.
But one, one of the punchlines of that story, I suspect, which I'm a member of, I think that, you know, he's at a bus stop that's 10 years into the future, right? And so to think that he's done an enormous amount of work, an enormous amount of fulfillment over those 10 years, and it's a collective asset that ends up mattering. You know, a lot of people look at the businesses that we've built, and I hear around town, like, there's a narrative about what happened, you know, like a bolt of lightning, like great timing, you know, all this kind of right place, right time, right medium, all this kind of stuff. And it, fair, I guess, like, you know, you need a quick story in your mind, but like, when you look at people who've built an incredible asset, 9 times out of 10, you can look at like the collective amount of work that went into that. And so I think the strategy that James is espousing works really well if you're well far along on your bus stops, you know? But if it's your first or second year.
Yeah, I mean, it won't happen even in the 6th or 7th. The thing is just seeing that it's possible. Sometimes that's, you know, all it takes for some people.
And by the way, I do see these patterns. It's funny you mentioned 6 or 7. I feel like 7, 8, 9 is like the wealth band. That's sort of when people become wealthy, if they're able to stick with the same business.
Yeah.
So I have this thing called the 1,000-day principle, which is a pattern we've recognized time and time again, which is that say you're making a professional salary of like $60,000 a year. Typically speaking, if you were to go move to Chiang Mai or to Austin or whatever and go full time on your own business, that reproducing the 60 grand would take about 3 years of full time effort. And that's not from freelancing or hanging out a shingle. That's from a business that like you could walk away from for a month, for example, and that 60 grand still coming in. Now you still got all your work ahead of you, right? Because you still got to do, that's not wealth. That's just making a salary and having a business. You still got to build that asset. And I see people 6, 7, now all of a sudden you got a chance to sell that asset, which is, you know, we ended up doing. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that because I would stay on the effing bus actually. And I would continue to build and build. Now you got a situation where James has a great deal of flexibility on terms of how he monetizes that asset. I look to like his high-end coaching model, for example. We talked about this thing, like if you want to test the health of your business, you do the no website test, which is you cut off all your Facebook ads, you take away your website, you cut away all of your marketing channels, and you say, what do you do with the next year of your business? Can you still, like, essentially, do you have customer loyalty? And, you know, those are the sorts of things that you build up over 6, 7, 8, 9 years. And I always look to James's coaching group as, it's like a insurance policy that I have in my back pocket. Like, I'm pretty sure I could have a high-end coaching program and that people would buy it, because of the trust over a decade of building like that. When they talk to me about their business, they know that I have their best interests in mind or whatever, and they might be willing to invest. And so in other words, like, why do I bring all that up? Like, yeah, that business model is like dependent on an enormous amount of track record, credibility, and trust. And I've seen a lot of people try to do something like that in the early days, or like when they don't have that kind of track record or credibility. Like the fact that James had an SEO agency with that many employees is really important to him being able to sell that coaching, right?
It's true, yeah.
And if he didn't have that, and we both know coaches that don't have that track record that can't sell a high ticket item like that. So now you ask yourself, oh, well, like it looks like a good theory, but what was the actual expense and what was the actual total cost? So when people look at like a TMBA and Dynamite Circle and all this kind of jazz and they say, good timing, podcast launch at the right moment, It's like, dude, how much did it cost us to build an e-commerce business that employed 16 people? That was the narrative that was on the show that built the trust, that got people to come to the events. So in other words, like you look at this enormous cost.
Yeah, that's true.
And my podcast cost me 60 grand plus a year to produce. And so it's easy to like say, right strategy, right, I got on the right bus, all this kind of stuff. But it's kind of like, that's not the success story that I'm seeing. What I'm seeing is like, somehow, this entrepreneur managed to stay on the same bus invest an enormous amount of collective energy. So I don't want to just say money, because if you're spending too much money, you might go out of business. So a lot of times it's like by convincing people to work for you, by like getting your followers involved, by, you know, working with Filipino staff instead of like people in your home country. Like you figure out ways to get it done over the years. And then 10 years later, it looks like some really clean philosophy that everybody can implement. And it's so simple. And not really.
Not really.
Not really.
So on that note, let's finish the show.
Let's finish the show. All right. We're at 45 minutes. That's a long show.
That's a long show. All right, man. It's been great having you on. You already pitched whatever you had to pitch in the beginning.
I did.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
Yep. Thanks for being on. Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.